You are now listening to the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
Where we stop at nothing to bring you the right facts on health, fitness, and psychology. Featuring some of the world's most experienced professionals. So you can learn, lift, and live. With your hosts, Meg, Dr. D, and Mehdi.
Here's the thing. Just because they're capable of doing it, they're a high-level competitor, doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good coach. There's a lot of them that they can demo, they can show you all day long how it's done.
One piece of advice that I would say to anybody is if you're going to get a trainer is look at their rituals, how they warm up, how they train themselves, what their philosophies are, especially when it comes to someone that walks in with zero. You know, if you walk in and you have zero fitness knowledge, look at their pregame routine, so to speak.
You have to find somebody who's going to not make you feel ashamed of where you need to start and understand the direction of where you are going and give you some realistic timelines of how long it's going to take you to get to those points.
Ask the right questions. I think that's the thing that we need to drive home right now is just ask trainers questions.
Yeah. Challenge them and ask them why, and they need to have an answer.
And if they have a big ego,
if their answer is because it says so or because it's good for you or whatever, I think you need to really challenge them a little bit more with it. There should always be a bigger reason why.
Yeah. And on that note, if you have any other questions or concerns or anything, or you want to reach out directly to any of us, head over to the Project Kuwait on Instagram and you could get in touch with us all over there.
Yeah.
All this and more in today's episode.
You can't pick your coach based on, maybe what skills and things that they're doing. Like, here's the thing. Some people who are great athletes can do all of those fun tricks on the rings and all those things that you want to learn how to do. Just because they're capable of doing it, they're a high level competitor, doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good coach.
Yep.
There's a lot of them that they can demo, they can show you all day long how it's done, but they don't necessarily know how to go through the progressions with someone, go back to those basics, or even just communicate it effectively to someone starting from the beginning and starting at that level. So it was interesting. I ran into a couple of clients yesterday that I had done some group coaching with, and I had asked, are you still joining, the group class? I had done some coverage coaching for it. And she was like, no, it's just too advanced. I can't do it. And that's definitely a level where the coach is very high level with it, but I don't think has quite the scope to make it inclusive, or is maybe running at the middle ground where she feels like she's not quite capable of doing it and maybe just not enough direction on how to kind of start building up the skills to get to that level to join, like no real direction outside of it. So it's kind of sad because it's, you see her going and doing something, just running on the machine and doing more cardio, which is probably the last thing that she needs in order to get back into that.
It's definitely sad. I mean, when you see average Joe, and that's talking from the guy behind the desk, which is me, is when I first used to go into a gym when I was younger, it's like, oh, I want to look like that guy. Yeah. I want that chisel six pack. I want to be bench pressed on 120 kilos. In reality, we don't know what's gone into that person doing it. And I'll use a calisthenics coach because I think calisthenics coaches are the best, or trainers, as an example of someone that learns from ground zero, I think, based on movement and not really the school of thought, if that makes any sense, where the foundation
absolutely
isn't as strong.
You can't skip the basics with that. It's going to catch up with you so quick in those bodyweight moves and calisthenics. You have to have a solid foundation. You can't really cheat your way through to get to a high level of a lot of those moves.
But some of these guys, I mean, it just clicks with them when they do a lot of the street calisthenics. I see a lot of these guys move into the gym atmosphere because they can do it on the streets. They can't really translate it to clients. And I've definitely seen it here, 100%. I've seen it with more than one coach or trainer. And they'll teach them, like you said, like how they learned it. But they don't know the progression of a handstand walk is to do the handstand on the wall. The progression of a pull-up, for instance, is doing the negative. And I've seen it. They don't walk them through those basic steps. And one piece of advice that I would say to anybody is if you're going to get a trainer, like you said, is look at their pregame routine, so to speak. Look at their rituals, how they warm up, how they train themselves, what their philosophies are, especially when it comes to someone that walks in with zero. If you walk in and you have zero fitness knowledge and you go to the trainer and you're like, yeah, I want to lose 100 kilos. We all go to coaches to lose weight. I mean, that's the number one thing, right?
That's what everyone thinks. Problem.
Yeah,
no, but that's absolutely does. And when I get someone who messages me or emails me and wants to work with a trainer, first thing is just, hi, I need a personal trainer. And my question back is always, great, let me know what your goals are, and why you think you need a trainer. And it's just always this blanket one answer of, I need to lose weight.
I need to tone. I need to tone.
Yeah. And I just love that. And this is where the clients usually engage or drop off is when I ask them, why? Why do you need to lose weight? Because the reality is with losing weight, it's a byproduct of so many other things in your life. The weight loss is, that could be the general outcome, but that's not where the focus needs to go. The focus needs to regress back from that to daily habits and to a lot of other aspects. So there's, I imagine health as this wheel that has, you know, six different little sections in it. And I mean, this is just my own little creation that I've made, but there's six pieces of it for me. And that is, you've got the food and nutrition side. So this is your eating style, your food choices, and your meal planning skills. And then you've got your relationship side. So this is like your social, your family, romantic relationships. So those kinds of skills within there. You've got your home and environment. So that's your indoor, you know, environment, your outdoor environment, and then your community. So people you surround yourself with. And then you've got your just overall spirit and energy of how you cope with things, how you deal with stress, and your creativity. How creative do you feel in your day to day? And then we've got, you know, your career aspects. So your money, your finances, your education. And then we've also got,
I'm so glad that you're hitting on all of those notes, because it's so important that people understand that it's not just one aspect of their life that contributes to something, that everything that you do throughout a day contributes. And when it comes to picking that trainer, you need someone or people, average Joe, I would say. And I keep saying average Joe because the majority of us sit behind a desk and it's like, we need someone to direct us the right way.
Exactly.
And when someone comes to you, and that's what I love about you as a trainer, you're like, okay, well, why do you want to lose weight? What are you doing? How can I help you get there? And are you willing to go through the process? Because
right.
it is a process.
Like, and that's the thing. So with this wheel of these like six different aspects, so you've got the last one, which is self-care, which includes your physical activity, your sleep, and your overall self-care of like beauty routine, you can call it whatever. So that's why I have people start off with this wheel, and I'll just ask them like, so indicate on each of these sections, like put a point on that line, that circle of towards the center if you feel unsatisfied in this area, and put it towards the outer of the circle if you feel satisfied in this area. And then we just kind of go around the circle and connect the dots, and you can see where these points that intersect really close to the middle, you can see what's where they're feeling really unsatisfied in their life. So if it is something within the relationships or within the career or within their self-care that is really close to that center point where they're feeling really unsatisfied, then you know that those are kinds of questions and conversations and habits and stress management and things that you want to bring some attention to. So like, yes, we're going to tackle the physical activity side of things, but the last thing I want to do to somebody is put them under a physical stress load when they have a significant amount of other types of stress going on in their life. So that's just important for coaches to understand, is like someone's coming to you for the physical aspect, but knowing that a lot of those changes and things, like especially if they're spending 1 hour a week with you, 2 hours a week with you, I mean, there's so much of that day that's left. So you really need to help them get into this mindset of what effort they need to be doing on their part outside of those sessions to make the most out of the work that you're doing. So the coaches have to be in touch with all these other aspects of health. It can't just be like, oh, I'm really good at bench pressing a bunch of weight, or I'm really good at muscle ups, or I'm really good at squatting,
so true.
And that's not necessarily the indication of that connection that you're going to be able to develop with that person. It has to be someone that you trust that you can have those conversations about, of like, what are your bathroom habits and how well are you sleeping and how do you feel at work? And
which coaches do in
your relationships. And things like that. So
it's sad because none of the coaches here do it. I think a lot of trainers in Kuwait get a buy, like they get a free pass on a lot of the stuff that the West has to incorporate nowadays. Because when you're training someone, you're paying $100 an hour. I mean, 20 to 30 KD, that's not a little bit of money. Right. You know, yes, that's an hour. But as a trainer, what are the added benefits you're giving your clients? When I'm a client of someone, I look at my trainer, I'm like, what's the added benefit? If I have an injury, can I message him at any point in the day and say, hey, this hurts, what can I do? And I have a coach because I'm doing CrossFit. I don't know anything about CrossFit, so I have a coach. And for the most part, I would give him probably a 10 out of 10 just because he's very responsive, very receptive, and he knows how to keep me in check, especially when it comes to lifting the right amounts of weights. And with other trainers, there are added things where it's like, okay, what are you eating? When I was a trainer, it was like, send me what you eat so we can track it together and I could teach you how to track. I think of a trainer as much as like a shrink, so to speak. You know what I mean? They're a psychologist. If you're with your shrink for more than a year, you got issues and your shrink's got issues. So a trainer should be able to train you or coach you to that path of a healthy goal or health and fitness, and your goals with them should evolve down the line. So for average Joe, look at your trainer's engagement with you. How engaged are they? You know, I think that's from the client perspective, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, you touched on a couple of good points there. So comparing them to a shrink, I mean, absolutely, there's a side of mental health that goes along with physical activity. I mean, those are very connected. But I would say if you're going to a shrink and yeah, after a year, you're still unpacking the trauma of simple issue, then yeah, maybe look into some other opinions or other discussions. But I mean, it's hard. We could go down a whole road with that.
I'm not a psychologist.
No, I know.
But I just want to say there's nothing wrong with
seeking out help for those kind of, like, mental health is a big thing. And I think that people do need to become more comfortable talking with someone.
Oh, it's going to be addressed. We have to say there's a time limit on how long
you should have a shrink. I think it depends on what kind of trauma you're
dealing with.
Wait,
if we're bringing a psychologist on, should we keep using the word shrink?
Yeah. Is that even used anymore? I don't know.
Well, we're all right. We'll get away with it. I'm sure people won't care.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the time, and it's the same thing with the physical trainer as well. I've had people that come to me very short term. And it's like, hey, I have some issues with my hips and I'd like to just increase a little bit of range of motion. So it's something as simple as I would see them, you know, even once a month, and I would give them homework. And it's like, all right, you stick with this for the next few weeks, come back, and then I'll know if they're doing it or not, you know, how well they've progressed. If you run into any pain problems or things, you know, along the way, you know, let me know. And that's more for someone who's a little bit in tune with training and kind of self-reliant on that.
Makes sense, yeah.
But then I also have people that I've been training with for a year, but what we've done over the course of the year hasn't always been like working on the same stuff. Like, I'm not just running them through workouts. It's like, you know, in the beginning, okay, we started working on our balance and things like that. And it's like, now we're starting to get in touch with coordinating in different patterns. And now we're starting to get in touch with lifting. So there's, to say, like a certain time limit on how long you should have it. I think just, you know, when it's a good coach versus someone who's just after that 20 to 30 KD for an hour is if they're just kind of running you through these just
but that's what I meant with a goal progression
of where you're going.
That's what I meant with the goal progression. Like, you can stay with a trainer for 5 years, but I'm sure in those 5 years, your progression is going to take a different direction. You know, like you may work with year one on weight loss, and then year two, it's turned into, no, I want to be more mobile. I can't reach above my head. So then you would probably work on someone with, you know, loosen up the shoulder joints, you know, getting that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say that just comes in like when to get a PT. And I think for sure, it's when you want to improve on a certain skill of some kind and you absolutely, you know, are just lost in how to do it. So looking for a good coach is someone who's absolutely, like you said before, engaged in the session. So that little extra, like, you have your standard rate of what coaches are getting here, but who's worth that,
you know, right?
And who's worth more. But it is, it's like if you're, your attention should be on the client for that time.
Don't pick the coach that has someone on a BOSU ball doing bicep curls. Sorry, I had to throw that in there right there.
Ask them why, if they're asking you to do that. Like, I just ask why.
That's because they're going to be on a boat and they're going to be on a boat and there's going to be a lot of waves. So they're going to have to do bicep curls.
Maybe.
That is never going to happen. Like, it's never going to happen. And you know what? Yeah, I'm going to shit on coaches and trainers at some point because, dude, there's no standard in Quake. There really isn't a standard. When I look at you training someone and I look at another trainer or coach, and I will not say any names because that's just not cool, but, you know, there's no industry standard that really holds true across the board. And I don't, maybe it's in the States too. I mean,
that is all over. But the thing with Kuwait is obviously appearance is very important and something that is a lot of emphasis is put on from young age. I mean, especially on female side, I know there's a lot of what your weight needs to look like, what your body needs to look like in order to get married and all these like family values and cultural values that are really pushed and really inherited. And so they get someone out here that looks good. And that's really the only requirement of someone being able to come out to Kuwait and train and just clean up really is if your body looks good, people are looking at that. And I've been turned away by people because my body doesn't look as aesthetically pleasing as someone with, like, I don't have a six pack, you know?
I don't have
super toned arms, you know, right now. And I've had people and a couple of clients that actually I'm still working with. And it was funny. And she told me that she said, my initial reaction to you was like, what is this woman going to be able to teach me? Like, she doesn't have these big biceps like I've seen on all these other trainers, or she doesn't have a six pack. And I'm totally okay with those conversations. Like, ask me why I don't have a six pack. That's fine. Like,
Yeah, that's true.
So I think a lot of the draw is just they see someone with a body that they think is what they want.
Yeah.
And so they choose to work with that person. And trainers use that to their advantage as a selling point here of like, my body looks great. And I know I can teach these people, I can just run them basically through any kind of workout, whether it's towards their goals or not. Like, they don't really know that what they want to work on. Like, as long as they get them moving, it's fine. I think that's the mentality of a lot too, is just like, oh, as long as they're moving for the hour, that's like better than nothing. Which, I mean, yes, an hour of movement in the day is going to be better than nothing, but that's what separates a good coach from a bad coach.
But I mean, for our listeners, I think our listeners are the type of people that they want to find a good trainer who can be more of a life coach or a health and fitness life coach, so to speak. And if you're looking for that, ask those key questions. Ask some of the questions that we've hit on. How will you get me to lose weight? You know,
always ask why. I think that's the biggest thing, like what to ask your PT. I think just when it comes to the programming, when it comes to anything, and I love that my clients do this and they challenge me with it because I have to have an answer for them. Like, I can't just make them do something just for the sake of moving. Like, it has to have some kind of meaning. So what is that meaning? So always ask why. Like, why are we doing this number of reps? Why are we doing this many sets? Why are we warming up this way? Why do we always finish our workout in this kind of a way? Why should I want to use more weight? Why should I use more weight? You know, there's so many different ways. I think coaches also get wrapped up in all these different ways to improve and change a load of like by making someone move faster or making them lift more weights or do it for more reps. And there's so many other different ways that you can give information to the body on what you want the body to be capable of and how you want it to move things. That load change can come in so many different ways outside of that. And it just gets focused on reps, weight, and speed for a lot. But always ask your trainer why. Ask those questions. And that's just part of your self-discovery as well. So that when you walk into a gym eventually at some point, like, you're not lost as hell and you can, you know, basically how to structure a safe session for yourself. And that's if you're coming in with, you know, not a lot of experience in it. Because that's one of the overwhelming things. People think they need to get in shape to go to a gym. And so they want to hire maybe a PT to do something in order before they can start doing stuff on their own. So I think always ask your PT why, you know, why you're having them do something. And a PT that gets annoyed by that, I think, again, then that's going to be a line.
Which is a majority. I mean, come on, how many trainers don't have a chip on their shoulders? Like, my shit doesn't stink and I'm the best in the building, which is something that drives me crazy. Because as a trainer and as a coach, I've coached for like 15 years and I've always been humble about my own game. You know, I know I've been an above average catcher. I've been an above average everything, but I'm not 6'2". You know, I'm not hitting a home run every time. And it's like, even with kids, I've seen them gravitate towards the guys that will be home run hitters. And it's like, dude, he can teach you probably some of the basics, but he's not going to teach you as well as me. Because to begin with, he doesn't have to hit for average. He doesn't have to do the average things because he has an above average body or above average genetics. And it's like you said, circling all the way back from what you said from the beginning, is you need someone to explain it, break it down, so that you can understand it. It's not always the best looking or the best who teaches the best. It could be your average looking trainer. I mean, come on, look at Liam's weightlifting coach. If you've seen any of his videos, the older Russian guy, you know, like, he probably threw up weight back in his day. But, you know, some of these older coaches, you know, they totally look average. You wouldn't even think it. Same with, I mean, if you go to football coaches, you know, soccer coaches, some of the most average players have become the best coaches.
It's usually people who work their ass off to finish behind those who just kind of had it a little bit easier. Natural talent.
I know, right? The natural talent, the genetics going their way and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to what we were saying in the meeting too, is like when I was just kind of observing what was going on the floor and just that good coach, I think if you're paying someone for that hour of individualized time, if they're on their phone,
that's
a red flag for sure.
Oh my God. I saw a trainer yesterday, I swear to God, 35 minutes on his phone with a PT. And you could tell the PT is like staring at him awkwardly, like, oh, okay, what do I do next? He's kind of just sitting there, you know, playing with his phone or doing whatever.
Right. And
if your trainer is on their phone and it's not to show you a video, fire him or her right away.
Yeah. There's a lot of benefit to, you know, video feedback and things like that, you know, recording and stuff. But I can also see where it just kind of takes away from the session, or you can tell if the person's motive is just to kind of throw it up on an Instagram page to get some...
To get some likes right away?
To get some likes or things like that. And it's like, you know, use it as a teaching method and a tool and post it later. You don't need to be messing around with that during your session.
Yep.
And just a couple other things, you know, just, you know, making sure that you have obviously the visual cues. So being able to demo positions and things that you want them to be able to be in, but get your hands on them as well. Like some people are just very receptive to that tactile cue. That's something that's taken me a while to get better at because there's been like, you know, cultural aspects too, of like, you know, understanding what is that boundary. But there's a huge benefit to being able to have that connection. That physical touch just helps.
Getting
with
that activation.
Good,
as soon as you poke connection. Someone in their back, that's yeah. when they're like, oh, okay, that's
But it's
where
also just a very
is.
Meaningful yeah. connection with the client, which is great. And then you have, yeah, your verbal cues and things as well. And what works for one client may not work for another. So they have to have some different tools in the back. So if you're not getting it after like they give you a cue like two or three times and you're still not getting it or feeling that it's right, like you need to ask them to like explain it a different way. And they should be able to do that. And other things just like, I don't know, how engaged are they through it? Like they're just
right?
sitting on their butt the whole time and just directing you what to do, but they never actually like get up.
That's a lazy trainer yeah. right there.
But then I saw some great trainers, you know, who were like running alongside their clients and then, you know, doing like good stretch yeah. sessions yeah. afterwards and very engaged. And like, as far as what they were doing for the workouts, I'm looking at it. And in my mind, I'm just like, I don't know how much sense that makes of that movement for that person right now, you know, where they're at. And that's, so there's two things with that. Meet your client where they are. Of course, you want to get them to be able to lift heavy weight and to run fast, but you need to meet them where they are. And if they don't have the mobility to be pressing something over their head in a safe position, then you need to slow it down. You need to work on something else before you have them go through that movement. Yeah, just being able to communicate with the client effectively, to have a rapport to where you can manage the expectations of them. So when you tell them like, I think you have too much weight on the bar, or we're going to start here. Like, I know you want to be able to do this movement, but this is where we need to start.
Yeah,
like
yep.
you have to be able to.
Such a good point. That
to
is such
talk
a good
them
point.
Into that, you know, so that they understand the direction that you're going. Like I have clients that want to do pull-ups, and so they'll want to like strap up like seven bands on the bar because they see someone doing it.
So
in class
yeah, you
the
need
video,
the trainer
like,
to say no.
I'm sorry,
you
no.
You need him
it's
to
like,
say no. Yep, yep.
You're, that's
or
not
going to yeah.
help you. Like yep. that's so they, you know, you have to find somebody who's going to not make you feel ashamed of where you need to start mm-hmm. and understand the direction of where you are going and give you some realistic timelines of how long it's going to take you to get to those points. But along those timelines, you get people that come in too and they're like, oh, I want to change my body in 3 months. And it's just like, listen, like once again, like I'm 2 hours out of your
week. You can do it. No, but as a trainer, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can cut someone's calories down to nothing. You could train them like a monster for an hour, just have them go, 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 crush their metabolism,
right?
And create all these issues that will show up a month or two later.
Right. So you can get them the results yeah. fast and then completely destroy their body.
And that's the
for
thing.
The next like, few months. And that happens too. Yeah.
But in Kuwait, it's the land of the magic pill.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
all want that magic
yeah.
pill here. And it's like touching back on when you were talking about a trainer that says, no, funny story. 2 nights ago, I was training and my coach trains my wife too. So, yeah, we kind of keep the coach in the family.
Low competition coach in the family.
I know, right? So they're training off to the side and they were in between sets. And he was walking by after he grabbed a plate or something. And he literally stopped me. I had my headphones in. I wasn't paying any attention. He literally stopped me and said, don't do that. Drop the weight immediately. You're going to hurt yourself. And I was doing a power clean and hyperextending my back underneath the bar versus squatting back down into it. And he was like, you need to do it properly and then we'll go up in the weights.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, people, you need a trainer to say no. You need a trainer to pull you back a couple of steps. Like if you have the guy that acts like a know-it-all and you're acting like a know-it-all, it's a recipe for disaster and you're screwed.
As much as you need someone to, I know we've talked about this before too, to also tell you, you know, like you need to push yourself a little
That's
bit more.
That's so true.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
What you're doing right now is like also a waste of your time because you're not, you know, challenging yourself whatsoever. Your body's not getting any new information. You're completely on autopilot with this movement.
So what about group sessions? If we're on autopilot and yeah. we're saying trainers don't pay attention if they're in a PT, I mean,
group training is difficult because it's hard on many different sides. Because from the programming side, you have to kind of train for the middle of the road. You have to know your audience for that. You have to have a lot of good tools in the bag for being able to scale depending on where you're programming at. But it's hard because again, it's not going to be an individualized attention. So if you're someone who's looking for a very specific goal of some kind, you'll want to hone in on that probably with the PT. Group coaching, it's great for like the community aspect and like pushing each other through it, making new friends. Like I love group classes and I love coaching group classes, but it's also under helping them understand the progression. So you need to go through progressions also as a class, you know, at times, and you build that into your hour structure as best as you can. So that everyone kind of understands and can see where each other are at. When I'm doing group classes too, you know, I use the clients as demos and things like that. I don't always do it myself. You know, I want to pull somebody out in the class and I want to say like, okay, here's what she's going to do. Okay, now let's watch. And can other people pick it out and see what's going on with that client? You know, is she bending her knees first or is she bending her hips first? Kind of developing the eye, and that gets them to be more aware of it when they go to do it on their own.
Especially with scaling options. I mean, right, I'm sure right. here you have to scale options because you can't treat each, every individual is different.
Right. So you're going to give a blanket kind of scaling option and it's going to be, very generalized ones. But a good coach, again, is going to be able to go into the micro level of the class and kind of see each person moving individually. And you're going to be able to offer each of them some advice, but you're also going to have that skill where you can step back and look at the entire group and make sure the entire group is staying safe. And you have to be able to do it at that macro level as well. So there's a lot with group coaching. It's great to move with other people. And I think that needs to be done more, building up a little community of people that keep you motivated. That's a huge benefit. But again, your coach needs to be engaged. Just because you're in a group class doesn't mean that you shouldn't have been spoken to individually within that class.
Yeah, coach usually needs to go around to
each person in that class and then as much as communicating to the entire class. And encouragement cues and things like that too. It's like, are you only hearing one cue from your coach the entire time?
I know, right?
Like those are kind of things of ways you can tell how engaged they are. So group coaching, I think, do it to meet people, to have fun, to test your fitness in different ways. And make sure that you're safe and managed well through it, that you're still learning something. PT, I would say, to hone in on those specific skills of whatever you see maybe in the group class. Like there's one area where you don't feel as advanced as maybe what other people are doing. You know, going back to the example I was giving earlier, where she felt like she couldn't keep up. You know, so then maybe that's an opportunity of like, okay, I want to work with a PT then to develop a little bit more strength or stability or something here so that I can participate in this when it does come up in a group class. And that's, coaches should just be able to give those kinds of
directions. And that's the thing, with the skill acquisition, you do go to a PT. I mean, I've coached baseball for so long and I've coached kids of all different skill sets. And I've coached kids that have never thrown a baseball in their life. And you get them, you know, signing up for the season. It's like, I'm looking at it like, dude, what am I going to do? This kid doesn't know how to throw. And when you have 13 other individuals that you have to walk over to and work with each kid individually, I love it because that taught me so much on how to work with a large group. And then it was funny because I started doing some boot camps for baseball players. You know, a lot of the baseball players, they get together and they said, we want you to run a boot camp for, you know, I think it was 15 or 16 of our players. They were all young kids. And for some reason, I ran the boot camp completely different than how I would have run a practice.
Right.
Because my practice is always at the beginning of the year, I focus on skills, building up endurance. I'll do like a 15, 20 minute patch of endurance, like towards the end of a practice or at the beginning of the practice. And I'll do all skill set things. And I'm talking basic skills like catching an egg just so you get some soft hands and whatever. So when I ran the boot camp, I like had them doing all these crazy moves. And I'm like, what the hell's wrong with me? Afterwards, I was like, what am I doing here? You know, after the first, I was like, this is stupid. And then I reverted back to what I was familiar with, what I knew is like, okay, these kids can't do single-legged RDLs. They can't do a squat. So how can I translate this more to the group I'm talking to and to the game? And that's when I went back to the wind sprints, the cup pickup. You lay down on the ground, get up, sprint to a baseball, throw it at a target. You know, these quick things that I can only work with them in a short spurt of time. And that's where it was really important. And when they came to me and said, coach, oh, I want to work on this, I'd give them their exercises to do at home. And you could always tell with the kids that went home, did their exercises, and came back the next week, how much better they had gotten in a specific skill set. Or I'd say, hey, you know, this guy, he teaches this, go sign up with him. And to coaches and trainers out there, you don't always have to hog the PTs.
Yeah, I think that, know what you're good at, what you like to do and stuff like that too. And that's the thing is, you know, you may have experience doing a lot of things and it's like, you want to offer it all. Maybe you want to teach it all, but it's stick to what you really enjoy and make sure your clients understand that. So that's why it comes to this very first session of just being able to communicate with each other on what do I offer as a PT? And then what are you looking for as a client? Because you don't want to have any false expectations within that. But I think it's cool, like what you were talking about with the kids, you know, giving them some homework and stuff to do. I think in the end, your trainer, your coach, whether it's group or PT, they should be promoting and teaching some personal responsibility in it all. Because there's, like I said, it's that practices. You know,
I can tell you're the trainer that's like, all right, you know what? Don't work on weightlifting. On, you know, we'll work out twice a week. And then on these other days, you're working on mobility.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
For sure. It's like, what do I know that they're safe doing on their own? And I show them, you know, it's like, okay, this is what I'll grab people, you know, like when I run my group classes, like I'll grab people after class. And it's like, this week, I want you to get in, you know, 5 sets a day of this move. And most of my stuff, it's minimal equipment. No, they might need a band at home. And most of them have got that by now. Very minimal things. It's just like, I want you to get in 5 sets a day, you know, doing this move. once you're able to complete X number of seconds of holding this or X number of times of doing this, whatever, like, let me see it again and we'll go back. And, you know, because it'll ask for things to do outside of that time too. But it's like some of them, if they're brand new to weightlifting, like I'm not going to go ask them to pick up a barbell and do some things that I know that they're not entirely safe with yet or comfortable doing. But for most people, it's just even as simple as just getting out and walking a little bit more.
I know, right?
But there's a lot of personal responsibility. So that's why I give them other aspects to focus on too. Like, okay, so outside of this session, what I want you to focus on this week is as soon as you wake up, you drink 2 glasses of water every day. You know, and maybe that's the habit they're focusing on. Or it's like, okay, you're eating Nutella and a piece of bread for breakfast every day. Like, let's see if we can maybe turn that into a muffin, you know, with no Nutella. Or let's see if we could turn that into like a bagel or I don't know, like whatever the next step is up. You know, we kind of talk through that of what do you like? Eventually to the point where I'm getting them to eat an egg for breakfast.
But that's awesome. You're teaching people the lifestyle. Yeah. You're teaching them like, hey, don't eat shit. Like that's, and I think, dude, you should, it would be awesome if you ran a workshop for trainers, but I guarantee you, if you did that, you would have no trainer
sign really
up
funny
because their egos are so big.
Yeah. That came up in conversation a couple of weeks ago with someone who had approached me and she said, I want to put on this assessment training for coaches. You know, same thing. She kind of observes other PTs in the gyms. And she's just like, again, seeing clients doing movements that she's like, they just have no business doing that one with that kind of a mobility and stability. And so she wanted to run a workshop to help coaches with an assessment of understanding, you know, areas to focus on. And I kind of told her, I said, you're better off getting like the gym owner to bring you in and make it mandatory for their staff because a lot just, I mean, there's some, it depends. There's, I don't want to rope everybody into the same circle because there's some that actually, you know, are very open to it and they want to learn from each other and they'll
few partner and far
up.
Between.
Yeah,
few and
it's,
far
it's hard
between.
To find. It's a
like,
small
trainers'
network.
Egos are so big.
Yeah.
They are so big. Yeah. The first thing that I learned when I went through a certification, when I went through some of my baseball certifications was functional movement. How to raise your arm up. What's functional? How to do, can you squat? Can you lunge? Can you do a dead bug? You know, these little things that I've never seen, you know, the gyms that I go to, I've never seen any of those trainers do that shit.
Well, so
I've
never
seen any of them do that shit. And it's horrible, dude. And their egos are so big.
I think just ask other trainers too, you know, like if you see them doing something that you're intrigued by or that you like, ask them questions about what they're doing or why you're having those clients do that. Definitely, because it's funny, I've just started training at a gym recently and with my client, I've been having to do a lot of like crawling patterns and getting down on the floor and different things. And there's very specific reasons, you know, that we do that. And I saw a coach who had been watching me do that for a while and has never once, you know, approached me about it, but I saw them incorporate some crawling with their client. But it was funny because, okay, so with the crawling pattern, if you watch any baby crawl.
Sorry, I'm laughing because like it's a typical Kuwait thing. Like I see her doing something. Let me
throw some of that.
Yeah,
in
let
there.
Me throw yeah. some of that in yeah. there.
So it was, you know, of course I'm like flattered, you know, that there's like something, you know, if that's, I'm assuming that's where they got it from because there was nothing like that going on before. But I saw them with their client. And so if, I mean, watch a baby crawl, even it's always the opposite arm and opposite leg that come off of the ground and back onto the ground at the same time. Mm-hmm. They release on the ground, like the right hand and that left knee are going to come up together. They're going to move forward together and they're going to come down together. And that translates into your walking. When you walk, it's opposite arm and opposite leg that are moving forward at the same time, which also translates into your running. When you're running sprints, it's going to be that opposite arm and opposite leg. So this person is having them crawl on this. And what happens with most people when you get them down to the ground in the beginning, which is why I love this for coordination and core training, is they have the same leg, same side, same arm going at the same time.
Now you're just confusing me. I need to drop down and start crawling.
Start doing it. So basically like both arm, both leg on the same side are going to be moving forward together. So if you think about that, like if you stand up and walk, and if you're listening, you can try this, like walk so that your right shoulder, your right arm and your right leg all move forward together at the same time. And then your left leg, like that's not how we walk, right? But that's how he's having this person basically train that pattern. There's no transfer skill with that. Like you want to be working this cross coordination, this opposite side, this right arm and this left leg to being able to move forward.
So did that trainer
together.
Know that's what your goal was?
No, he absolutely knew it because he was having his client do it, like same side moving forward. I'm just like, you would never ask her to run.
I hope that's not my wife because she was crawling the other day at the gym.
No.
She was doing she's doing sparring training.
Oh, okay.
So she had to like crawl on all fours on the ground because you know the whole barbed wire thing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I hope she's not talking about hey there.
No, definitely not. I would let you know. I'd be like, wait a minute, no. But dude.
Let's talk about some positives about trainers, because we're going to have a lot of haters after this. They're going to be like, what the?
I think it's the ones that are just really engaged that make a little bit of time. Like, I had a client yesterday who sent me a text. She was out for breakfast and she was like, I feel like I want to eat some of these carbs, you know, I'm kind of craving it, you know, can I eat them kind of thing. And it was a great teaching opportunity. And it took about 90 seconds of my day to voice note her back and just kind of remind her of this spectrum where we talk about, you know, better carbs, not, you know, better, what's better or worse, not can I or can't I, you know, and it's just a simple little question like that. So having that accessibility, setting up the boundaries, like my clients know that they can do that with me, but I also have a handful of clients that I do personal one-on-ones with too. But somebody who's helping you that they feel comfortable enough asking those questions and getting those questions, I think that's a sign of a good trainer. But making yourself accessible to that, having, like I said, that trust and that engagement of recognizing a day where maybe it's less of the physical training and it's more of that emotional support and stuff that they need. So do your clients, you know, feel comfortable bringing up some of those things to you? You know, are you able to gauge their mood with things? You know, what is your connection with that kind of stuff?
So summing it all up, we got know your goals.
Yeah.
Have your trainer involved in your life, help and choose what your lifestyle should be geared towards, whether it's performance or weight loss. Make sure they have you working on mobility things. Yeah. Like know their routine also. Ask the right questions. I think that's the main driving, you know, the thing that we need to drive home right now is just ask trainers questions.
Yeah. Challenge them and ask them why, and they need to have an answer.
And if they have a big ego, tell them to piss off.
If their answer is because it said so or because it's good for you or whatever. I think you need to really challenge them a little bit more with it. There should always be a bigger reason why.
Yeah. And on that note, if you have any other questions or concerns or anything, or you want to reach out directly to any of us, head over to the project.
I
know, right?
He's got it.
I know. We haven't had that much humor today. What's wrong with me? Something's going on here. Head over to the Project Kuwait on Instagram and you could get in touch with us all over there.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Shoot us a message.
We good? You good?
Yeah, I'm great.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. You can also find us on Instagram at the Project Kuwait. Thank you, and join us next time.